back with this week's episode of Brick House. Bob Johnson here.
Matt Baker here.
Matt Baker, he just flew in from Phoenix, and boy, is his patience tired.
Yeah, it was great. It took me about 5 hours to fly from Phoenix to Burbank.
You could have hitchhiked here that fast.
Yeah. Hey, you know, I'm alive, and I'm raring to go.
This Sunday morning, unlike the Clippers, you know, you are ready to go. They're currently taking a shit in their own bed versus the Toronto Raptors.
Yeah, they're down,
at home.
Down by about 20, at least 24 or something at the time of recording.
Yeah, terrible, terrible. But what were you doing this morning?
Well, I was going to tell you, yesterday it's been an interesting 24 hours. I went back to Phoenix, and I was staying at my parents' house, and I was asleep. I was supposed to meet my brothers for breakfast yesterday at 10 o'clock. So I wake up, I look at my phone, it's like 8:30. Like, I have plenty of time,
plenty of time.
So I'm just sitting there talking shop with the old parents for a while. And Bjorn, who was on the podcast, was supposed to eat with us. I was going to pick him up. And he keeps texting me, are you coming? Where are you? Like, and I said, yeah, I'm coming. No worries. And then brother Chris texted me and said, hey, we're near the front. And I said, okay, well, I'm going to be closer to 10. And he said, okay, well, it's almost 11. What happened was my phone didn't change the time. So I was running an hour behind.
Strikes again. Another victim.
Yeah. So it's been an interesting 24 hours for me, Bob. I've been an hour behind, and I've been.
It's not even Phoenix's fault. They don't participate.
Yeah, I know. I was too dependent on technology, Bob.
Darn it! Sorry to hear that. Sorry to hear that they've claimed another life.
Oh,
or another brunch.
When will this madness stop, people? Another breakfast gone haywire due to daylight savings, or lack thereof.
Man, that's probably why McDonald's changed to all day. They couldn't take another year of daylight savings. And they're like, we better just do it a week before
switch. But anyway, what's basketball been up to, Bob?
Well, in the big news, I think the Rockets management is listening to the Brick House podcast.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. We did a segment about whether or not it was time to panic.
Yeah.
And 48 hours later, they fired their head coach.
Yeah.
11 games into a 3-year extension. This podcast is going to be pretty coach heavy. You know, big Rockets fan. Was never the biggest Kevin McHale supporter, but fired this early into a $12 million contract. It's got my conspiracy senses tingling.
Yeah.
I just feel like this story is only being reported a fraction of what's actually going on.
Oh, man, I can't wait. You know, I love a good Bob Johnson conspiracy theory.
I think we can all infer, and most journalists are inferring, that it wasn't so much necessarily that the team turned against him, but James Harden.
Oh, yeah.
And possibly also Dwight Howard.
Well, the Rockets lost yesterday again, and Dwight Howard sat out again.
They only barely won the game the day McHale was fired on a miracle three by Corey Brewer and 45 points from James Harden.
All it took was 45 points from one player and a miracle three at the end, Bob. I say they're sitting pretty.
The silver lining in all of this is that Daryl Morey is a fan of Brick House Podcast, obviously.
Oh, that is good.
And we are dictating NBA management decisions from the dining room table here. So
yeah.
It's pretty exciting. You know, if you're going to lose your coach and your favorite team's going to be 4-8, at least we know we're playing God here with our microphones. Anyways, yeah, so I wanted to talk about NBA coaches. And before we get into the depressing segments about how these guys are put away at the same rate as the Salem witch trials, I found a couple of funny coach stories that I'd like to share.
Okay, good.
We'll probably even force some segment into this introduction for Greg Popovich. Popovich story. An article by, I can never know how to pronounce his name, Woj. You know who I'm talking
Adrian
about.
Adrian Wojnarowski.
Thank you.
Something like that, yeah.
Just had an article on Yahoo Sports. 5 days inside the LaMarcus Aldridge free agency.
Wow, well, you know, Woj is... I mean, he's one of the...
He's NBA insider.
Yeah, he's
elite.
One of the most respected insider service.
Yeah, so he had a lot of funny stories in this article I recommended on Yahoo Sports. Anytime you can get a glimpse into the Popovich that Popovich hides from everyone,
yeah,
it's always good. And this is what he had to say about the Aldridge courtship. It was multiple teams all vying for just a chance meeting with Aldridge in Los Angeles.
Absolutely.
So Masai Ujiri is trying to get a meeting with LaMarcus Aldridge.
He wants him to come to Toronto.
Yeah, Woj just talks about how he's just in this hotel in Beverly Hills, and there's only a handful of hotels in Beverly Hills where all these guys have converged, you know, right around the 4th of July weekend. And he's carefully composing text messages to Aldridge, you know. Every word or, you know, emoji is just...
Ujiri.
Yeah. Okay. The future of the franchise hangs in the balance.
Right.
And
much like... You wouldn't know anything about this, Bob, because you haven't been in the dating pool for a long time, but much like an initial text to someone you want to ask out, you will compose it word by word, not just like a sup.
You don't lose all your memories when you get married either, by the way. So I still remember those text messages, you know, whether it was to the wife or
tell
former girlfriends.
Tell me more, Bob. Tell me more about this married life.
Okay, yeah, so your hair doesn't fall out. Well, maybe.
Yeah.
Over time. Yeah. It's all inevitable.
Okay, so Masai Ujiri is trying to ask out LaMarcus Aldridge.
He's trying to win his affections, and he can't get a hold of him, but him and Pop... L.A., Aldridge, and Pop are coming out of one of the hotels in Beverly Hills. You have to read the Woj story. They're coming out of one of these hotels, and Ujiri's there, waiting to talk to Aldridge. And so this is what Pop says to him. He says, "Hey, Masai, you ought to give him $35 million, you know?" And apparently L.A. says, "Well, you know, he would if he could." But Pop was really just busting his balls because not only had Ujiri given an offer at this point to Corey Joseph, to get him away from the Spurs, but also just gave the massive $15 million a year offer to Damari Carroll,
right?
Who is the Budenholzer's player on the Hawks or the Spurs of the East. Apparently the Spurs, so they met with Aldridge in this hotel room in Beverly Hills. Popovich is apparently wearing jeans and a T-shirt.
Sounds about right.
The players that were there, Tim Duncan, Tony Parker, Kawhi Leonard, and Patty Mills.
Was on the Blazers at one point.
Yeah,
so.
I thought that must have been the connection, and that, you know, maybe he's the only one who, was fun out of any of them.
Yeah. Hey, bring the Aussie. We need someone to lighten up this crowd. Yeah.
But apparently multiple players were wearing sweats. None of them brought their cell phones or championship rings to the meeting. Apparently they didn't even talk about the championships they had won. They didn't promise a championship. They didn't promise anything except that he would enjoy the pursuit of a championship. It also pointed out on Bill Simmons' new podcast, or Chris Ryan and Juliet Littman's new podcast, sources say they used to do NBA After Dark on Grantland.
Oh, yeah.
Well, they were just talking about the fact that Pat Riley may have unintentionally swinged the decision for L.A. towards the Spurs.
Really?
Yeah. Because, you know, he met with the Suns. He was really impressed with the Suns meeting.
Yeah.
Tyson Chandler.
They walked Tyson Chandler in unannounced, yeah.
Right. So they're really excited with that. He was not impressed with the Lakers meeting. But Pat Riley, even though they didn't have any cap space, convinced him to have a dinner with him, at which point it's rumored that he suggested he return to Portland for a year and then sign with Miami after that.
Wow. That's almost not legal. It's kind of
he
a
is
gray,
a free agent
yeah, it's kind
when
of a
he's
gray
talking with him.
Right.
But maybe that's why these are unconfirmed suspicions. But he essentially pitched him on the idea of, at a certain point, you know, like Chris Bosh leaving Toronto for Miami, you know, he's sacrificing stats for championships.
Yes.
But apparently, so... L.A. decided after that meeting, you know what, he told his agent Arne Tellem that he was going to need the holiday weekend, the 4th of July weekend, to consider. But he called him on the morning of 4th of July and said, "I want to be a Spur." And he said, you know, it was after his meeting with Pat Riley that he realized all that matters is winning.
Wow.
And Chris Ryan said that it was like, he imagines Pat Riley like breaking a high ball in his hand upon like hearing that he could like, have possibly helped his arch rival Spurs, you know.
Oh man, that's brutal for him.
I thought it was pretty brilliant. So that's how Popovich won LA, and Pop is the coach. He's the longest tenured coach. He's been the head coach of the Spurs since 1996. He's got what you might call job security,
yes,
in a way that maybe nobody else, definitely nobody else in the NBA does.
Right.
So it affords him this casualness.
Biggest free agent on the market, you show up jeans and a t-shirt, and then you're just lobbing jokes around in the lobby of the hotel while Jerry's like sweating and frantically composing this love letter line by line and like wondering if the tone is correct and like looking at his hair is straight. And then you see
Pat Riley's got the flower just right in his lapel.
Yeah. It would have been a perfect movie moment if Jerry sends this text, he hits send. And then all of a sudden he sees Aldridge and Pop walk in. Aldridge picks up his phone, looks at it, then just hits clicks it off and sticks it back in his pocket and keeps walking away with Popovich, like just a broken-hearted Masai Ujiri in the corner, witnesses it all. Oh, man, that poor guy.
Oh, man, so let's get into the next segment where I'm going to talk about Mark Jackson's lament on television the other day.
Oh, man.
You might have watched this game. Well, it was the day McHale got fired, and Jackson was without Van Gundy for the first time I could remember in a while. But he had some opinions that he shared on national television about coaches. he talked about how he didn't think McHale deserved to be fired, and he was a great coach and said all of the things that you would expect. But he also really introduced Fred Hoiberg to the national stage.
Right.
First, as the football season winds down, people actually start watching basketball.
Yeah.
He said that, you know, he really had to temper the success of Fred Hoiberg this season and understand and give credit where credit is due to Tom Thibodeau, who really built the entire team he's inheriting here.
Right.
You know.
Yeah.
He doesn't have any experience coaching in the NBA. He's just inheriting this great team,
of course,
perennial winner.
Yeah, someone has to set the dinner table before the food is actually served. I don't know if that makes sense as a analogy, but yeah.
Oh, this wasn't the Bulls Suns game. This was the Bulls Pelicans game.
Okay.
So he also talked about since New Orleans was losing and has started the season more slowly than anyone could have predicted.
Very slowly.
He really shamed New Orleans for firing their coach, Monty Williams.
Oh, yeah.
He was like, oh, whoa, we didn't really realize what a good job he was doing until he's gone.
Yeah. That could very well be applied to Monty Williams. I'm not sure the commentator in that situation, I don't think it's the same, quite the same for old poor Mark Jackson.
Yeah, well, that was just the obvious thing. It was like he wasn't talking about Fred Hoiberg, and he wasn't talking about Monty Williams. He wasn't talking about Kevin McHale.
Or Alvin Gentry. Yeah.
The most thinly veiled way of just complaining about the state of coaches in the NBA.
Yeah.
And he still feels that burn from the door hitting him on the ass on the way out of Golden State.
Can you blame him?
Yeah, we'll get into it. But Mark Jackson is the first Warriors coach to lead the team to consecutive playoff appearances
Gross.
In 20 years.
Gross. You just got to get that out. Get that out.
So let's just get right into it. This segment, the Seinfeld segment. I love it. What's the deal?
This is going to be a...
What's the deal with... Did you hear the new bass line on this one?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I like it.
I'm listening to it right now. Wink. What's the deal, Bob?
What's the deal with good coaches who are fired? You know, why do good coaches keep getting fired?
Okay.
I got a list of some ones that I think were really good fired recently. Kevin McHale, as we started talking about, won 56 games last year and went to the Western Conference Finals, which was much further than anyone predicted they were going to go. Tom Thibodeau, mm-hmm. also this summer, fired with a long-running feud between him and the front office, mostly over players' minutes. But you can't deny that he, despite who was injured, who was not injured, brought the Bulls to contending every year.
Oh, yeah.
And as one of the, was one of the best coaches, I think one of the top six winning percentages of all time.
Their lack of success was not the coach's fault in that situation.
Right. In 2013, Lionel Hollins won exactly as many games as Kevin McHale. Won 56 games and went to the Western Conference Finals and then was fired.
Hey, congratulations. Here's your consolation prize.
George Karl. George Karl in 2013 was the second coach to ever be fired in the same year. He won Coach of the Year mm-hmm. after winning 57 games that season in Denver. And then the bonus thing here was one of the reasons apparently he was fired was his refusal to play one JaVale McGee.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Seems like a good enough reason to fire someone, I guess.
Yeah, another bonus fact here is that Brian Shaw, who replaced him, has already been replaced in Denver, and he failed in a lot of ways there in Denver, but one way he reportedly failed was in attempting to wrap the scouting reports in an attempt to relate to the younger players on the team.
What?
There's no footage of this that I could find.
Wait, what?
He would, hip-hop style rap the scouting reports, so that the players would listen to him.
Yeah.
I don't know, you know. What sort of, you think he was like a Drake guy or more of a, like a Sound or Tribe Called Quest, La Soul type thing?
Well, he was probably really plugged into the music scene. So he probably, would go in between, whatever was popular that he was, sometimes it was Rick Ross, sometimes it was Drake, if you're going to do that, you're really plugged in the music scene. You know what's going on. You're not at all. Yeah. So he had a grip on it. He knew the whole time what he was doing. It could in no way be looked at as like patronizing or just like, wrong.
Yeah. If you're wearing a tie in a professional position, like it's going to look completely normal to try and wrap a scouting report.
If you saw that, the movie that just came out about Steve Jobs, where it takes place over three major events in his life.
I haven't seen it yet. How is it?
Well, he raps the whole time is basically what I'm saying. It's like, that's how he really motivated the Apple employees. People think he was kind of mean and would make people, he was just a chilled out bro rapping, doing all that stuff. So yeah, it's a proven method, Bob.
Yeah. Well, the last coach I have on here, George Karl was the second coach to be fired the same year he won Coach of the Year. The first coach to be fired the year he won Coach of the Year, Mike Brown, Cleveland in 2010. And not only was he Coach of the Year that year, he's the only coach to be fired after two consecutive seasons of 60 or more wins.
Yeah, clearly that guy was a terrible coach. Yeah. Well, he did have LeBron. But,
well, that's my question to you, Matt. That's the what's the deal is what purpose do you feel? I think it's multi-pronged, but what do you think the purpose of firing a good coach is in the NBA?
I think it comes down to a lot of times people just think they need to make a change. Like Thibodeau and Brooks. I don't think Brooks is as good a coach as Thibodeau. Mm-hmm. But Brooks, I think they just think that it was time for a change.
Oh, man, he's another guy that should have been on this list. He went to the conference finals three out of the past 5 years.
So, well, with Cleveland, I don't know why you fired Mike Brown.
His story ended awkwardly, not just there. He then later moved to the Lakers.
Yeah.
The second season with the Lakers was fired five games in. This is Mike Brown. In 2013, Cleveland like a desperate ex-girlfriend hired him back,
yeah,
saying that they made a big mistake, gave him a new 4-year deal, and then fired him into the second season.
So his last, like you said, his last 2 years of Cleveland, he had 60. He won 60 games. His only year in LA was the strike shortened year,
right?
And he won 41 games. He had a 62% winning percentage.
Yeah.
And then the only year in Cleveland, they won 33 games, and that team was awful. He won't get another job. At least maybe not for like 5 years.
Well, in 5 years, he'd probably stop being paid by the Cavs and the Lakers.
Right. They just get really anxious. They get really antsy, the owners. If someone has to be fired, if the Lakers start 1-4...
You're not going to fire a $100 million superstar?
Yeah. When the Lakers start 1-4 with Dwight, Nash, who else? Gasol.
Kobe,
and
yeah.
Kobe. They're not going to trade all four of those and be like, all right, Brown, we're just rebuilding. We're going with you.
Right.
That's just the main thing. It's just, you got to do something, I guess.
I didn't prepare a game show this week. We're switching it up. Kevin McHale has made us all pause to think, but we do have this one stat here, and we're curious to know how many of these Matt could get right. So I looked at a list that was 2 years old. Okay. It's from 2013. And on this list, there were 30 coaches.
Yeah. So this is from 2013.
Well, 2013, but hear me out here.
Okay.
So only 10 of them were still head coaches on the same team.
Okay.
This is 2 years ago.
Yeah.
So 2 years ago.
How many teams are there in the NBA, Bob?
30.
Okay.
So only a third of the coaches have been retained since 2 years ago. There's only 3 coaches in the league who have been with the team for more than 4 years.
Okay.
We already said Greg Popovich and Eric Spoelstra. Do you know who that third coach is who's been with the team the longest?
Carlisle.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Nice, Matt.
That were the only three I could think that have been around that long.
So, yeah, there are one stat that I saw that inspired me to do this whole list was I saw that Jeff Hornacek, who was hired in 2013, mm-hmm, was tied for 8th as the longest tenured head coach in the NBA.
That's insane. I don't even know how that's possible.
He's tied with Mike Budenholzer and Steve Clifford, who were also both hired in May of 2013. So
Clifford somehow made it through that rigorous Bobcat/Hornets coaching.
I think Michael Jordan's just cheapskate.
Yeah.
No, but he seems to really like Clifford. He's probably a yes man. So in between Rick Carlisle and Jeff Hornacek, there are 4 coaches who have been with their team for, you know, since 2011 or 2012.
4 coaches.
4 coaches.
Okay.
That have been with the same team since 2013.
Okay.
Can you name any of these coaches?
Let me give it a go here first.
Okay.
Jaeger from Memphis.
No.
Okay. Terry Stotts.
Yes. August 2012, okay. Terry Stotts was hired. He was number 7.
Terry Stotts is number 7. Then we have, I have to remember the teams that are in basketball. It would be I guess McHale's out. He's not there.
McHale is out. Let me give you this hint. This is maybe just confuse you more. So of the 30 coaches, this is crazy, right? There's only 10 that have stayed with their team. 4 that were with a team at that point are now with a new team. And I'll just give you those names so you eliminate
them. Frank Vogel is one.
Boom, Frank Vogel. Yeah, he's okay. Number 4 after Carlisle, actually.
Okay.
January 2011, he was hired as the interim head coach. And then July 2011, he was made the permanent head coach of the Indiana Pacers.
Wait, I got another one. Randy Whitman.
Boom.
Wow.
3 for 4.
Boom. Okay, I got to think of this last one.
Also, January 2012 went from interim to June 2012 permanent head coach.
Who
also has the nickname Randy Whitless.
Oh, I see.
By true DC fans.
And then our boy Brad Stevens.
Brad Stevens, he's new. He was not a coach 2 years ago.
He wasn't. What am I thinking?
But this guy was hired by Musai Ujiri.
I was just going to say it has to be the Toronto coach, but but I don't remember who. Is it Sam Mitchell? I don't remember who their coach is.
Oh, his name is Dwayne Casey.
Dwayne Casey.
Yeah.
What is Sam? Sam Mitchell is the T-Wolves now, right?
T-Wolves. Yeah, Dwayne Casey was hired in June 2011. Wow. Yeah, not even the best coaches. The coaches who changed teams, Doc Rivers went from Boston to L.A., Clippers. George Karl was with Denver, fired after winning Coach of the Year, yeah. Now with the Kings.
Almost fired after a week.
You know, this won't be published till tomorrow. He might might be inaccurate.
Yeah.
Lionel Hollins went from the Grizzlies to he's now with Brooklyn. And Mike Malone went from Sacramento to Denver.
Right.
Him and George Karl, right. Like they could have just traded each other. 16 coaches that are no longer head coaches in the league. I'll just go through them really quick. You can comment as you wish here, Matt. We've mentioned a lot of them. Scott Brooks, Monty Williams, New Orleans, Tom Thibodeau, Chicago, Tyrone Corbin.
Yeah.
He will never coach again.
Yeah.
Utah. Kevin McHale, Mark Jackson, Rick Adelman, he's retired. Mike Woodson, he's a Clippers assistant. A few of these other guys might be assistants, although I'm not sure where. Jacques Vaughn is no longer with Orlando. Mike D'Antoni, I don't know. I feel like Mike D'Antoni is on a boat in Venice right now.
Yeah, who knows, but I don't know what he's up to.
He's got a striped shirt on. He's making his own pastas at night.
I think the real question is, what is Dan D'Antoni up to?
Impersonating Mike D'Antoni,
yeah.
In the Venetian casino in Las Vegas.
there you go. That's good.
Mike Brown, Larry Drew, Doug Collins, Vinny Del Negro, Avery Johnson, and PJ Carlesimo, and Lawrence Frank. Although I think Lawrence Frank might be a Clippers assistant now,
yeah,
too.
He's somewhere.
And the turnover rate is high, Matt. It's like the working at Applebee's, working at the NBA, although they give you millions of dollars to not work, too, when you do part ways.
Yeah, totally.
Just like at Applebee's. But we got to tell people what to watch next week.
Game of the Week.
Big night in the NBA next week for our Game of the Week. I picked it as Memphis at Houston on Wednesday night, November 25th.
Okay.
I'm a Houston fan, of course, and I highlighted this one because Houston just dumped a loss to Memphis after the day after firing McHale, and now they're going to play him in Houston the day before Thanksgiving. I'm wondering when it is we can just decide that Houston has quit on this season.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully it won't be anytime, and that they'll turn it around, but this will be one game to watch to see that effort level, checking in on it.
That's a good one.
Also that night, Dallas plays San Antonio. That'll be a good game. Atlanta plays Minnesota. And you and I are going to miss all these live because we'll be at Utah LA Clippers.
That's right. It's the first Brick House basketball outing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wish we had our Brick House t-shirts to wear, but soon enough.
We were thinking about live podcasting from the game, but there's no outlets in the seats, so I guess we could technically just talk to ourselves, and that would be like that.
Just record messages into our iPhones.
Yeah, yeah. Bob, I have a game of the week for you here, but it's not necessarily because it might be good.
Oh, okay.
But on Monday, tomorrow or today, I guess, when is this coming out?
Yesterday.
Monday, November 23rd, we have the 76ers at the Minnesota Timberwolves, okay? So
fascinating two teams to highlight.
One team is going with a lot of youth, but they also have Tayshaun Prince, Kevin Garnett, Andre Miller. They, as Bjorn said, they have a veteran at every position to kind of teach the youngsters.
Yep.
The other team is the 76ers, and as Bjorn said, who knows what they're doing?
Yeah.
It's a matchup of two teams that are going young and know they're going to struggle for a little bit. One has a plan, and the other is just going to hoard big men.
Yeah.
Forever.
Well, yeah, one way of looking at it, too, is one team in the 76ers decided to intentionally destroy basketball in the city of Philadelphia for the chance of getting a franchise player.
Yeah.
Whereas Minnesota accidentally didn't do that well had a player that was jerked around by their former manager, David Kahn, and they didn't intentionally destroy basketball in Minnesota, but still got two franchise players in the process.
Right.
And that's exactly what Philly was going for. You know, that's what Sam Hinkie was pitching to Josh Harris 3 years ago. It was like having a player or a combo like Andrew Wiggins and Karl Anthony Towns of which to build going forward at this point. You know, this is the point in their rebuild where they're supposed to start just like accidentally winning too many games because their 19-year-olds are overqualified to be rookies.
Right.
But not the case at all. And Minnesota is my NBA League Pass team of the year so far.
Oh, yeah. Just a quick Dan D'Antoni update there, Bob.
Please.
He's in his second season coaching the Marshall Thundering Herd, the college basketball team. Last year in West Virginia. Last year they went.
Isn't that where Chad Pennington went?
And Randy Moss. They won the Division I AA football championship when those guys were together. Dan D'Antoni's from West Virginia and actually played at Marshall and was an assistant coach there.
Wow.
So he came back to lead Marshall to greatness, and in his first season he went 11-21. It's going to be a long road. It's a rebuilding process. But he came back to be head coach 43 years after he was an assistant with the team.
Wow.
So
One stat that you texted me this week I had to highlight. He was featured in our Eating Crow section last week. Deion Waiters.
Yes.
You pointed out that he has missed more layups, 14 this year, than he has made, 13. All that stat's a few weeks old. He's probably missed more layups since
He's,
or a few days old.
Right. So he's definitely – that margin is definitely widened. But when you look for a max player, Bob, that's what you really look for. So
There was some other news that I just discovered this week that I thought was pretty strange. Adam Silver did a interview with the Wall Street Journal and revealed that he has a stealth Twitter account which he monitors the activities of NBA players and franchises. Nate Scott, who writes for The Win, had a few suggestions on what his stealth Twitter handle might be. It's a list of like 30 of them, but here's a couple I thought were pretty good. At buy NBA jerseys, lots of them. at I swear some of our franchises aren't profitable.
That's okay.
At be nice to me, Michelle Roberts, or at Silver Fox, at Sterling Buster, or just at Roger Goodell.
Hiding behind the name of another commissioner.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty clever. We're gonna try and come up with some Adam Silver tweets for next week or look for them in his stealth mode on Twitter.
Yeah,
he's probably just looking at pictures of J.R. Smith's girlfriend's butts. That's what he set up the account for.
Yeah, that's why he's stealth.
You told me that besides the Clippers and Rockets, there's someone else we should be hitting the panic button over this week.
It is definitely time to panic!
Would you please elaborate, Mateo?
Well, is it time to panic, Bob, about Goran Dragic?
Yeah, the Dragon. It's hard to imagine the Dragon could be slayed, you know?
Right. Well, this year so far, he is averaging 10 points, 4.6 assists. He's shooting 41%, which is considerably lower than he has the past five seasons.
Yeah, I saw that he's like over 50% the past few years.
Yeah. So he just signed that giant contract, obviously, in the
$85 million.
$85 million over 5 years. Right as I text that to you, then I went and looked, and we talked about this, but apparently his wife had some troubles while she was pregnant and couldn't make it to America, so she had to have the child
in Slovenia. Yeah,
and Goran has been away from his wife and newborn child ever since, basically.
Mm-hmm.
which has that is probably a good reason why he's struggling to an a little bit, like being away from your newborn and your wife.
Plus, he's in a new city.
In a new city,
the only people to meet are really attractive women.
Yeah, yeah. So they. But another thing is that.
And guys are selling you gold chains.
Yeah, well, he has enough money for all those gold chains now. But another reason is, I don't know if the offense caters to what he can do best.
Mm-hmm.
He needs the ball in his hand, and he needs to run pick and rolls, and he needs to run plays where he can get to the basket.
Yeah.
Which is tough, too, when you're playing alongside Wade, and Wade needs the ball a lot. And Wade sometimes,
and even when he doesn't need the ball, he can't stretch the floor in the way that Isaiah Thomas or Channing Frye, you know, whoever was on the perimeter for him in
right.
Phoenix.
So this offense, is it safe to say that they're still going to need time? They're going to need maybe a full year with Goron to figure it all out? Because they're not getting any younger, obviously. And they're pretty much a team built to win now. They're not a team built to win in the future.
Yeah, I would say it's not time to panic on Goran Dragic. You know, if I were a Phoenix Suns fan, I would probably be breathing a sigh of relief that we didn't just give him 5 years, $85 million. And he might really start to permanently decline in the third, fourth, and fifth year of that contract.
Well, it's looking good as a Suns fan. The Suns traded Goran. Basically, last year they traded Goran. They traded Tyler Ennis, Miles Plumlee, and a first-round draft pick, and got back Brandon Knight and two first-round draft picks.
Not bad.
And Brandon Knight signed a 5-year, $70 million deal, is only 23, and has been playing out of his mind the past few weeks. He's averaging 21 points this season. He just had his first career triple-double, and him and Bledsoe, when they are on, they're actually get along on the court, and when they're both on, the Suns are only a third shooter away from being an actual actual playoff contending team.
Man. Yeah, with a couple of trades with Sacramento, Phoenix could be comprised of nothing but Kentucky Wildcats.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a...
I think there's four Kentucky guards on the team right now.
There's four Kentucky guards on the Suns.
Yeah. Knight, Bledsoe, Goodwin... And who's the guy they just drafted this year?
Devin Booker.
Devin Booker.
Yeah, so they...
And they did draft Harrison, too, Andrew Harrison, but traded him.
Trades with the Kings and somehow got Boogie and Willie Cauley-Stein. Then, oh, man, they would just have a lockdown on all the Kentucky players there ever were.
Get Drake as their general manager and Calipari as their coach?
Yeah.
Just ride off into that.
Well, and if they got
sunset.
I guess Rondo too. They could have to. They'd pull Rondo from there.
Oh yeah.
So it would just be a
just an all point guard starting vibe.
Yeah, but that
you think you're going small, Golden State?
Yeah, we're going.
Show you.
Very small. But yeah, I think all the Suns fans who are upset with that Goran Dragic trade, the trade's actually looking pretty good for the Suns right now.
Yeah. Well, I don't think it's time to panic just yet, but we'll monitor the situation. And,
as we always do, Bob.
I wish I had, maybe I'll find some ominous music for this next segment. I don't have anything substantial, although I do have a sneaking suspicion about something.
Oh, no.
I was watching the Suns game and realized they have a new arena sponsor.
Yes.
Called the Talking Stick Resort Arena.
Correct.
I started digging into it, you know, like I was writing True Detective Season 3, and I haven't found anything yet, but I tell you, something stinks.
By golly, something's amiss.
I'm going to find out more about it, but it reminded me of the David Morse resort in True Detective Season 2.
Yeah.
And there's just something ominous about it, and I just wanted you to know early that we're going to be monitoring this situation.
You're going to be checking out this. Well, the Talking Stick is a casino in Scottsdale, Arizona. They have a bunch of...
You can't bet on sports there, by the way. I did look into that.
Right, right. But they also have a bunch of
Although daily fantasy is probably fine.
Sure, that's completely different, Bob. We all
that's
know
not
that.
Gambling.
We all know that. It's different. But they also have a bunch of baseball fields over in that area.
Mm. But, it's a good place to bury bodies.
Yeah, yeah, that's over by the casino. The the arena's downtown. But okay, so something may or may not be up with that.
I do have a new segment for this one for this week. It is it's a short one, but it's called "Yo Mama Is So Fat."
Yo Mama Is So Fat.
Oh, man.
You're gonna love this, Matt. So this is the diss of the week.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I felt like our show is really missing something.
Someone in the media said something about someone else. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, this is an insult of the week. In fact, I have two this week. The first one comes from a Draymond Green tweet.
Solid.
So the night after the Raptors game on Tuesday night in Oakland, he went home and watched MSU, his alma mater, beat Kansas. And Valentine, what's his name, Denzel Valentine?
Right.
Had a triple-double that night. He was the only Spartan to ever record a triple-double besides Magic Johnson and Draymond Green.
Right.
But Draymond did tweet, quote, "Watching my Spartans on DVR, Perry Ellis look like he's 37. Let it go, my man.
Oh, man, that's
referring
great.
To the man's hairline, apparently.
That's great. During that same game, I texted my brother Adam and said, why is Perry Ellis still at Kansas? It seems like he's been there for a while.
Yeah, he looks like Jim Clemens.
Yeah.
Coached the team out there. The other diss I found was on Justin Halpern's Twitter. He did Shit My Dad Says and my favorite NBA podcast of all time, Short Corner Pod.
Ah, yes.
But he tweeted this. "I call my cousin the 76ers because he gets destroyed three times a week, but keeps telling everyone it's okay because he knows what he's doing." I thought it was brilliant. I'm gonna scour the news media for the NBA diss of the week.
The diss of the week.
If you see one, tweet us at Brickhouse Podcast or email us bob@brickhousepodcast.com.
On the next episode of Brickhouse.
Next episode, I have a prediction for you in line with our NBA coaches. Here's the headline that doesn't exist yet, but I predict it might. The Warriors, in a completely unexpected move, fire Steve Kerr.
Whoa.
The Warriors, they've just ended November 19-0 and were quoted as saying, "Steve Kerr won a championship, but this year we haven't lost a game."
Yeah.
So Steve Kerr was really holding us back in the old being undefeated category.
Well, then Kerr can join Mark Jackson on a broadcast lament, the Kerr and Jackson's lament.
But my second part of this prediction is this was all part of Steve Kerr's master plan. This is a conspiracy deep dive. His whole strategy for, you know, playing Phil Jackson against the Warriors last year and nailing a $25 million first-time NBA job was just so he could win a championship, get fired, and then just get paid to boogie board for the next 4 years.
Down in San Diego?
That's his idea. I mean, he probably might play a little beach volleyball, too.
Yeah.
Something to look for on the next episode of Brickhouse. We'll monitor more. Thanks for flying in and talking to me again, Matt.
Hey, pleasure to be alive, Bob.
Talk to you guys soon.